Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hi, everybody. This is the second episode of the storyboard program related to a specific subtopic within the activities related to a storyboard program which we have developed regarding muscle and neuromuscle junction scientific panel of EAN. The subtopic is differential diagnosis in muscular dystrophies. We are glad to have Professor Tiziana Mongini as a speaker for this episode, and I will do a very brief introduction of the content of this episode. I'm Gabriele Siciliano, I'm a neurologist in the academic center of the University of Pisa, and me too involved in activities of our panel. I was a former chair with Christian Claes. And now we have Tiziana Mongini. She's a member of the management group of the same panel. And we wanted to discuss about what is the content of this episode. In other words, to analyze a recent paper that can be useful and stimulating for which is the program of this subtopic area. One of the problems of muscular dystrophies, especially now that we have the aid of genetic and molecular aspects of this disease that can change some of our more traditional knowledge about the clinical appearance of these diseases, especially, in different muscular dystrophies. But especially now, we have to think about in which way, what was the more traditional knowledge of disease can be changed related to what genetic and modern molecular diagnosis can add to this topic. So, I think that starting from this very recent paper, we will address a quite interesting aspect of clinical appearance of myopathies and particular muscular dystrophies, and we will discuss with Tiziana, which are some more, I can say, modern aspects to have a view of this area. Please, Tiziana.
Okay, thank you, Gabriele, for your presentation. The paper that we selected for this podcast is a little bit atypical because it's entitled Distal Hereditary Motor Neuronopathy as a New Phenotype Associated with Variants in BAG3. It was published recently in the Journal of Neurology, and it is an interesting paper authored by a group of Spanish clinical and basic researchers working in Madrid, Valencia, and Barcelona. And it describes and validates the correlation between BAG3 gene mutation and the new phenotype, mainly characterized by neurogenic distal muscle atrophy. Oh, the relevance of this observation is that the BAG3 mutation so far has been always considered to cause a myopathic process, namely a distal myopathy with cardiac involvement and classified as myofibrillary myopathy because of its neuropathological characteristics. So, BAG3 is a very interesting gene because it's the protein is functioning is a co-chaperone in the so-called chaperone-assisted selective autophagy in combination with several proteins of the heat shock proteins groups, which are been already extensively studied and related to neurogenic processes, neurogenic neuropathies. So what is interesting that the function of this protein is evidently common in muscle and in nerve and in neurons. And what still needs to be clarified is the different factors that may express this mutation prevalently in neurons, giving a neurogenic features, or in muscle, or in both, probably in both. So this is a good example of the what we already observe in our neuromuscular field of gene causing different phenotypes and same phenotypes caused by different genes, which is one of the big issues, the big topics that needs research and that are stimulating the research in neuromuscular fields. So by itself, I don't think it's a revolutionary breaking news, this paper, but since almost every month we can read description of new phenotypes and new genes related to neuromuscular presentation. But I think that this is the occasion, give us the occasion to increase the attention and the awareness of clinical neurologists when approaching a patient manifesting with distal muscle weakness and atrophy. In fact, when patient presents with difficulties in walking on his toes, on heels, or has difficulties in his hands, without any sensory signs, it needs a complex differential diagnosis, not only related to the classic neuropathic patterns that all neurologists well known, but different disorders maybe needs to be taken into account. An extensive diagnostic workout should be started, not only for experts in neuromuscular disorders, but also for general neurologists. In these cases, an acquired neuropathy could be suspected, of course, because it's the most common case, but also a genetic condition should be taken into account. And this is special, very, very careful, the choice of genetic test that has to be selected and requested, because it's now the increased offer of genetic testing may be confounding, and so it may be not correctly addressed. So remembering the differential diagnosis that includes not only the classic pure motor neuropathy defined as Charcot-Marie-Tooth groups, but also the complex group of the so-called distal spinal muscular atrophy, distal SMA, and in this case, it must be reminded, also several muscular dystrophies with distal involvement, such as facioscapular humeral muscular dystrophy, or also myotonic dystrophy may present at the beginning of the story of the patient with distal muscular weakness. Not forgetting the group of myofibrillary myopathy and the increasing group of distal myopathies, which more and more genes are related with a complex overlap between genes and phenotypes.
Just a question, teacher. At which extent, apart from more traditional and basic investigations such as CK, blood level, dosage, or electromyography. For instance, investigations like MRI, muscle MRI, can be useful in this phenotype, in discriminating the origin of the problem.
Oh, of course, ancillary examination are very important because, first of all, we have to think about neurophysiology, which has a crucial role, an important role in the differential diagnosis. But an alert must be is needed, must be outlined, because in all these cases, the neurophysiological features may be mixed. We can find both neurogenic and myopathic features. And if the neurophysiologist is not alerted and is not very expert in studying this kind of patient, the conclusion, the interpretation of these features may be misleading and so influencing the genetic test choice and probably prolonging the correct diagnosis of this patient. And this is the message, the important message, is not to rely not only on neurophysiological aspect when approaching a patient with these characteristics, but also rely on the other clinical data, maybe also in the history of the patient or in the other in important clinical signs that may be overlooked, if not looked for specifically, and on magnetic resonance imaging, of course, because now we are more confident in magnetic resonance pictures and imaging. We can distinguish between neurogenic process and myopathic process, and the different involvement of different muscles may indicate a suspect of one gene involvement respect to another gene involved. In myofibrillary myopathy, it is very important and to distinguish muscular dystrophy. I think that we maybe another presentation and a podcast about muscular imaging and its relevance in differential diagnosis. But as always in clinical medicine, not just one factor may be the prevalent ones, but the combination and the correct interpretation of all these aspects may also validate some mutation, because now we are seeing the rise of many different new mutation, the so-called variant of unknown significance, that in some cases we don't know really the exact pathogenetic mechanisms in a single case, and that is also important to validate the significance of some mutation. Apart from the study of the family, the linkage of the distribution of the family in the families of this mutation. So it's a complex work that we have to afford. So I think that coming back to our BEC3 paper, so we are facing now a large variety of gene causing distal muscular weakness. And the story is not finished, not over, because we need to understand why a gene, a similar mutation in the same gene, causes different phenotypes. So what regulates and in the pathogenic cascade, what is the main factor to explain the different involvement, different tissues in this case, because we have really different, similar but different presentation. And this is a big relevance, of course, for the diagnostic, avoiding the so-called prolonged diagnostic journeys of the patient, that is one common, the earlier diagnosis, but also in to target correctly the possible therapeutical studies, because this is identifying the correct pathogenetic mechanism as a basic significance when we want to treat a patient with the new genetic therapies approaches or genetic modulating that are really promising now in neuromuscular fields. So this needs really a combination of basic researchers and clinical researchers working together on this identification of the clear pathogenetic mechanism. Very interesting era for neuromuscular disorders.
Tiziana, we have the last 2 minutes. Coming back to some more clinical aspects, what do you think about the usefulness to consider associated joint modifications, in neurogenic versus myogenic distal involvement at the lower limbs? I mean, for instance, inverse knee or ankles or pescavus. Do you think that the presence or not of these alterations can be useful to distinguish between neurogenic and myogenic distal?
Okay, this is an interesting point, giving relevance to clinical observation, of course. I think that yes, because in the classic neuropathies, we see the classic clubfoot appearance and manifestation. But we must not be too fixed to these clinical signs. When a typical clinical signs like joint deformity or tendon retraction, that are also another point, more typically of dystrophies and or neuropathies in respect to myofibrillary myopathies that usually don't have this kind of joint alteration or joint retractions. So you have to consider as a combined signs to note in the definition of the patient. But then if the genetic results or the complex neurophysiological results and the imaging results are not consistent strictly with this correlation, you have to open the mind and go over. Because especially in adult, more than in children, of course, but in adult cases, with an old history, maybe also some dystrophies may appear like with some features more common seen in neuropathies. Of course, you have to be open and to reinterpret if not all the data are consistent with that explanation, with the gene mutation explanation. And then this is a warning in interpreting the genetic results.
This is the important message. I thank Professor Tiziana Mongini. I would like to remind our attendees that Tiziana Mongini works in the University of Turin in Italy, and she's involved in a lot of collaboration studies in collecting data for this very, very rare phenotypic appearance of muscle diseases. So I think that we can stop here. I thank all the attendees and hello to everyone.
Thank you to you and everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.